Thanks so much, Elaine. For the people who are in the back, if you want to come, there are a couple of rows in the front all the way, so feel free if you're planning on staying for the next session to come to the front. Oh, I'm going back. All right, I'll let you fix it. Is that the first one? Okay. All right. Feel free to come to the front, please. Our next presenter is Dr. Elaine Karabeff from the Department of Biostatistics and Epidemiology at the University of Oklahoma. She will be speaking about whether mass treatment is the appropriate approach to eliminate schistosomiasis.
Thanks for being here. So I decided to get rid of the disclosure part first. I have nothing to disclose. Okay.
How does that work?
Which
one? Just click
which one?
Left
one. The left one?
Yeah.
Oop.
So resume. Right one then.
Oh. Okay, maybe this. Let's try that. Ah.
There you go.
Here we go. Okay. This project was funded by the NIH NSF Ecology of Infectious Disease Program. The first author of this study is Veronica Tallow. She is a social scientist who works at the RITM Research Institute for Tropical Medicine in Manila in the Philippines. And she worked in close relationship with Portia Alde for this part of the project. Our other collaborators are Don Balalong, Dr. Olveda, and Stephen McGarvey. Schistosomiasis japonica is one type of schistosome that is endemic in the Philippines, China, and parts of Indonesia. It used to be endemic in Japan, but as Dr. Olveda says all the time, they actually eliminated it by building shopping malls. That is, it is transmitted by snails that are in the water. So people get infected when the Sarcaria that comes out of the snail, so the little worm, goes through the skin, infecting humans. But there's one particular thing about Schistosomiasis japonicum is that, there are 47 different mammals that have been identified as being carriers. So humans are one of the carriers, but animals as well. The worm is shed in the feces, the little snails get infected, then the worm matures in the snail, and then the Sarcaria can infect the mammals once again. So you can see very easily that it's something that's really not obvious to control. Repeated infection with this worm can cause damage to the liver, intestines, and lung, and also has been shown to reduce growth and cognitive function in children. The global burden of disease estimates for disability due to schistosomiasis have been grossly underestimated. The original GDB estimate for schisto was the same as impetigo, which was 0.002 for something that is believed to be more severe than that. In 2000, the Philippines Department of Health decided to adopt mass treatment as their way of eliminating schistosomiasis from the Philippines. This approach of mass treatment has been shown to be cost-effective in China, where that same strain is present. So the objective of this work was to describe the mass treatment activities that took place in the Samar province of the Philippines in 2004 as part of a longitudinal ecological study of infection transmission. And what we did as well was to explore the correlates of participation to that mass treatment and coverage in 50 villages of this province. The longitudinal ecological study, the goal of this study was to look at the link between irrigation systems and infection with schistosomiasis. So this is the Philippines, the 7,000 island country. And this is one of the study was took place in one of the largest province, which is Samar Island, and we were in Western Samar, so it's this part. And we had villages in the northern part, middle part, and southern part. In order to prepare the community for the mass treatment, the study group started by conducted 6 focus group. The focus group aimed at obtaining community perceptions and beliefs regarding the cause, transmission, sign and symptom, diagnosis, and perception of severity and treatment of schistosomiasis. The information from the focus group were then used to develop messages to try and promote the participation in the mass treatment. And these messages were then taken and put into culturally acceptable illustrated flip charts and flyer. Illustrated because a large proportion of the population is illiterate. Then these flip charts were taken to the communities 2 weeks prior to the planned mass treatment. During these presentations, community leaders, the Barangay Health Center, Service Center, midwives, school teachers, and anyone else felt to be useful for mass treatment were invited to come. And then the group discussed issues with the treatment, beliefs about what schistosomiasis causes, including areas of the effect of schistosomiasis on growth and cognitive function. Then the group discussed the best way to approach the community to invite them to come to the mass treatment. Then based on these discussions with the leaders of each village, pamphlets were developed with the essential messages as well as posters announcing the mass treatment. And then each member of the community were given these pamphlets. In order to see to what extent what was recommended at the community level was actually applied, an index, a participation index was developed. That index included the use of bandilio, or an individual announcing the activity using a megaphone, mass announcement and mass media to disseminate the information, that was 15 points in the index, house-to-house visit for information dissemination, which was 25 points, the next one should be number 3, presence of the barangay mayor during the treatment activity, which was 10 points, proportion of village officials, up to 20 points depending on the proportion that participated in the program, proportion of barangay health workers who participated in the mass treatment, as well as participation of other residents. 46 barangays did any of those between 2 and 5. 4 only did number 1. On the day of the mass treatment, the schistosomiasis working, the STEP project, which was our project, staff had a list of all villagers based on a census that was done a few months prior to this. So every time someone would show up, they would check their names. Now, another thing that happened is the STEP staff also had a list of everybody who had tested positive for schistosomiasis, but only a small proportion of the whole population were tested because it was too expensive to do. But the leaders were really encouraged to seek people who were infected so that these people really, really got treated. Then on the day of the treatment, again, the staff members had a checklist of everybody showing up. Then everybody was weighed, and then a split dose of praziquantel was given with 4 hours lag between the two doses. And the vast majority of people actually got the two doses, probably 99%. In order to determine the participation proportion, we took the number of presenting to treatment site as the numerator and the number of census individual age over 5 as the denominator. And the coverage was calculated as the number of residents receiving both doses divided by the number of census individuals aged more than 5 years old. In order to identify factors associated with showing up for treatment, we used a Bayesian hierarchical logistic regression where we had individual level variables such as age, gender, step participation, and stool analysis results. as well as village-level variables, namely community participation index and the census number in hundreds. And in addition, we had a hierarchy on the village level, and you will see why in a minute. This is why. This was the coverage by village. So each bar, the total of the bar, represents the proportion of people in each village who presented for the treatment. And then the part in green is the actual proportion who got treated. And you can see that there is a tremendous variability from village to village in terms of the coverage, going between around 20% to a maximum of maybe 85% of the people showing up. The average coverage was in the order of 48%. Because pregnant women cannot be treated, we also calculated an adjusted coverage, but it really increased the coverage from 47 to 49%. The reason being that gender didn't have all that big of an impact on showing up for treatment. This table shows the results of the Bayesian hierarchical logistic model. I should mention that in that village there were about 30,000 people age over 5 who were eligible for the treatment. Young children age less than 10 in general received more treatment than anyone age over 10. The age group between 16 and 40 had the lowest coverage, indicated by a proportion odds ratio of 0.35, followed by those age 40 and more. There was no interaction term between age and gender, which could have been expected because of the women of reproductive age or pregnant women not being able to receive treatment, but that did not happen. And you can see that male only had a marginal prevalence odds ratio compared to females in terms of being treated, which was really surprising to us. We really thought that female would be treated much less. But this may be partly explained by the fact that coverage was so low anyway that being male or female didn't really make a difference. People were not showing up. Another surprising result was that participating in our project, and we had about 6,000 participants to the STEP project out of the 30,000 villagers, was associated with a reduction in showing up for treatment. And this was really, really puzzling. And we had a major confounding between being a STEP participant and the parasitological exam. So having been tested for schistosomiasis and being tested positive had a huge impact on showing up for treatment. It's logical because, one, these people were really encouraged to get treated. And second, well, they knew they were sick and they knew they were infected. Therefore, they would show up for treatment. People who had been tested but were tested negative also participated more than those who did not have any stool exam, by a factor of about 3. But once this is taken into consideration, the participants to our project were less likely to show up. So one really wonders, did we bombard them with too many messages? Were they overstudied that they decided, oh no, I don't want to do yet another thing for you. I had enough. And it still to this day puzzles me to what extent this happened. Obviously, if you don't control for the confounding of parasitological exam, our participant had a much higher coverage. Why? Because most of them received the parasitological exam as part of the project. In terms of the barangay level variables, the census also had an impact. That is, for each increase of 100 inhabitants in the village, we saw a reduction of around 10% in the participation proportion. In terms of the community involvement index, we really were able to show that the more involved the village leaders and the more was done at the barangay level to encourage people to participate, the better the coverage was. I also tried, we also tried to include the different components of the index one by one to, or several at a time to see if any had a better prediction. But it ended up that the index was really the best predictor of participation. So to conclude, the Department of Health goal for schistosomiasis-free nation using mass treatment might be difficult to achieve because we saw an overall participation of about 47% in an area where schistosomiasis is really endemic. The prevalence, the adjusted prevalence of schisto in that area is around 15%, which is still very high. The participation in mass treatment was determined not only by individual factors, such as age, gender, and knowledge of infection, but also factors at the village level. And these factors at the village level are those that we can definitely try to act upon in order to improve the mass treatment coverage. And all we could say from these results is we think that schistosomiasis prevention education may be better off starting at school because we the coverage was a little bit better among school children. So maybe they could be the future of better mass treatment coverage. And we believe that much more fundamental and applied behavioral and social science research needs to be conducted to really understand why people do not show up for treatment. There's also a need to better understand the potential role of community opinion leaders and high status individuals. That is, if the village chief says, sorry, I won't get it because I'm scared of the side effects, no one in the village will get treated. And we actually had one instance where that happened. We also need intensive understanding of why people choose treatment or not, including their own infectious status, infection of others, and knowledge of transmission. And such research may improve the intensity, content, and targeting of community and individual level information, education, and incentive around mass treatment. To conclude, I just want to thank our collaborator and field staff, political leaders of the 50 villages, and obviously all the villagers who participated in this study and to whom we offered the treatment. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Helene. I think both the last two presentations really highlighted the fact of the importance of community buy-in, that everybody believing that and agreeing with the intervention that people are proposing. Last year I did a project at the University of Maryland Emergency Department looking at parents' perceptions on vaccination for their kids for flu. And it seems that we have, you know, despite all the media information about vaccination, schools giving a push for vaccination, a lot of the parents came back saying, we're afraid that my child will get sick from getting the flu vaccine. And I see that in clinic. I've tried to, you know, try to overcome those ideas, talked about how vaccinations are important, look at polio and so on. But one mom will say, nope, I had a colleague, she got really sick from the flu shot, and then her kids got really sick. None of us are getting it, no matter what. So, and you need one person like that to spread that information in the community, and then you're messed up. Few people will say, yay, I got the flu shot and I didn't get the flu. But if they get one, you know, fever after they got the flu shot, even a week later, they'll say, that was the flu shot, and then you're stuck. So I think that kind of barrier with getting, whether it be for a malaria shot or for schistosomiasis, any kind of prevention, you have that challenge always to kind of see what's going on and get the leaders involved as well to give you your push. So we have about 10 minutes. Let me just check. Yeah, we have about 12, 15 minutes for questions.
I have a question for Dr. Hartman. These were all great presentations, Fred. On avian influenza, I'm wondering if you could talk just a little bit more about what goes from being a suspected case to a confirmed case. It's really kind of riveted by that province of 244 suspected cases and zero confirmed. Is our quality system preventing information?
Well, that's a very good question. In fact, capacity, which involves having a polymerase chain reaction, PCR, to at least identify the H5 component. And we were able to do that in less than a year in two labs, both the agriculture and the public health lab. So you have to have rapid diagnostics. If you have to draw the sample,